Hey, this is Jonathan, and welcome to Your People First, the podcast that showcases HR and reward best practices. I'm delighted to have you here, and now it's time to put your people first.
This podcast is brought to you by Buddy, an HR and payroll software.
Hi, this is Jonathan, and welcome to another episode of Your People First. Today we have with us Fran. Fran, would you like to introduce yourself to our guests?
Sure, Jonathan, thank you so much for having me. My name is Fran Moisa. I am the founder of FM Search, and I'm a headhunter and talent advisor based here in lovely Malta.
That's wonderful. And as you would have guessed, today we're going to be speaking about the recruitment process and talent hunting. It is obviously a key part of an organization. An organization without people isn't an organization. So if I was a company trying to identify the right talent to bring into my company that fits in with my company culture, I know probably what people look for today is not what they looked for 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
So how maybe did that change, and where would I start?
So I always advise the clients that I work with, before they actually go to market, to take a step back and assess the role at hand. And what do I mean by that? Is to have very good clarity on the type of person that they're looking for. And when I say the type of person, it's not necessarily just on the skill set, because if you're looking for an accountant, for example, you know kind of what they need to do. But it's important to break that down to understand the extent of duties and responsibilities that that person will have. So to continue to use the example of an accountant, you know, you have many different types of accountants. You have statutory accountant, you have management accountant, then you have taxation specialist, VAT specialist, and so on and so forth, which the majority of businesses put them under the sphere of accounts.
And you never get what you want if you just put accounts.
Exactly. So it's important for a business to define the scope of the role. So when you say you need an accountant, for example, what type of an accountant do you need? What will this person need to do? Where are the areas that you can train in? Because no one is going to come ready-made. I mean, this is a myth. Even at C-level, you know, there will always be an element of training at a very basic level. It will be the element of training in the sense that every organization, every department, every structure is different. And we all use different methodologies, whether internal or external. So it's important for a business to assess the capacity of training that they have. So again, using the example of an accountant, I definitely need this person, for example, to know how to do VAT returns. I can't train in that. I don't have the time nor the capacity. And I need them. So identify the three non-negotiable skills that this person needs to have to be able to add instant value to the role. Because a lot of the disgruntlement that happens is when a company hires someone and they feel that they're not getting value for it because, oh, but I have to do this for them, I have to train them that. And that's not really fair to the person or to the business in itself. So start with the three non-negotiable skills that this person must have. Okay, then under those three, put three nice to have, but those nice to have, arrange them in such a way that they are complementary to the internal training that you can offer, not external, because external training would cost you. So if you want to send them for ACCA, for example, if they don't have the money to do it themselves, you'll have to support them.
Yes, exactly.
And things like that. So it's important to look at internal training and understand the capacity that you will have. Okay. Now, once you define these areas, it's much easier then to interview people. It's much easier to see exactly what you're looking for in people as well. And when it comes to cultural fit, like you've mentioned, look, truth be told, I'm a big fan of diversity in the sense that it's good to hire people that are not like you. That's what I mean by diversity, not only gender diversity and other areas, which are incredibly important for a business, but also personality diversity is really important. We tend to hire people like us. So if you're an extrovert and you interview someone who's an introvert, you're going to think, are they really going to fit? They didn't say much, you know. You completely ignore kind of all of the skill set and everything. And you tend to gel by the personality because naturally we're drawn to people that are similar to us.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's important that before you start hiring, you identify that. And, you know, you look at the team and see the personalities of the team, you know. And it's good to have a mix. It's very good to have a mix.
And I think as well, in one of our earlier episodes, we actually were talking about neurodiversity. And sometimes it's also good to probably understand which roles require what traits.
Yes, yes, definitely, definitely. I mean, there are certain areas of business that require particular personality traits, you know. But that's not to say if someone doesn't immediately display those, that they're not there. Because what sometimes companies forget is that the interview process can be very stressful for people. So someone who is, you know, perhaps quite nervous by nature, they will struggle to get their point across at the interview. And sometimes the hiring managers may think, oh, he's not very good, but he actually is. So another part of the hiring process, after one defines what they're looking for and takes a look at the scope of the role, is to define the interview and the recruitment process. And there are the basics of that, such as timeline, who's going to be involved in the interview, who are the decision makers. So, you know, you have clarity. There's no point to start doing interviews and then you think, oh, but Janet should have spoken with them. Let me get them back. And, you know, Jonathan should have spoken with them. Let me get Jonathan. It becomes, you know, quite messy. And
you stretch the process a lot. I think it's not fair on the candidate and on the company.
And on the company, I mean, to be fair, if companies would sit down and calculate how much it costs, that they would be shocked. And the interview process would go like from 3 weeks, they will be reduced to 1 week because it does cost money for a business not to have that person in. What we were saying, I've lost my train of thought. Sorry.
It's okay.
So we were talking about the interview process. Define.
Yep, and basically once that interview process is defined, then how do I follow that up?
Exactly. And then is the soft part of the interview process, what we were saying earlier about making people comfortable. Now, most interviews these days are still conducted the way they were run 50 years ago. So what is your strength? What is your weakness? Why should we hire you? Look, the reality is that no one is going to tell you their weakness for real, okay?
Or it's whatever comes to their mind at that point. If anything.
And usually it's quite a standard answer. I'm a perfectionist. I work too hard. I can't say no to people. I'm very detail-oriented. And, you know, these are cliche answers, and I get it, because people want to put themselves in a good position. I mean, very few people will tell you the truth. You know, I mean, when I used to interview, I did, but I'm not exactly normal in the head. So I can't expect everyone to be like me, you know. So for example, for me, it's very early morning meetings. You might as well not call me, because if I don't have my coffee and 10 cigarettes, forget it, we're not going to talk.
So you must have quite a bit this morning.
I did. I woke up at 7 and did my routine, you know. So for a company, for example, that has 8 a.m. meetings, I would be completely the wrong fit because I would never show up, no matter the consequence. Forget it. Not going to happen.
Basically, I have to work around the people to make sure you get the best out of them.
Exactly. So how do you get the weaknesses out of people? You know, it's by putting yourself in a position of driving the conversation in a natural way. Okay. Because you wouldn't go on a date and ask your date, what is your weakness? They're going to think you're weird. Right?
Yeah, it's not like you go with a checklist. What do you like?
Exactly.
What don't you like?
You know, or you're not going to go to a bar and strike a conversation with someone and ask them, hey, where do you see yourself in 5 years? They're going to think like, what is wrong with you?
It's too early in the conversation. The relationship hasn't even started yet.
The relationship hasn't even started. So you need to build that trust. I mean, these questions are important, don't get me wrong. but we can formulate them in such a way that it opens the room for discussion. So instead, for example, of asking someone, what is your weakness? You ask them, look, one of the reasons we're hiring for this role is, you know, it could be a promotion or a replacement or something like that. So be honest, you know, about it. Sometimes things don't work out. I mean, it's life. There's nothing wrong about it, you know. And at the moment, we're a little bit behind, for example. And we really need someone, you know, to drive this. And we had this problem last month, for example. We were late with some submissions and we found it very stressful. Was there any period in your life that you find it like that, that you found, you know, in a situation where you were very uncomfortable or it didn't work out? And how did you deal with it? And let them tell you, because that's still a form of understanding gap areas, but without putting someone on the spot.
Yes, and it's probably going to be more realistic as they have to recall a scenario which is more realistic
in
their past. And
exactly.
If they probably said, no, I've never had that problem, then you can delve into why.
You can delve, yes.
Are they someone who prepares really well or have they never done this?
I mean, if someone would tell me that, I would tell them, oh, it was fantastic. Teach me your secret. If you never have problem, I need to know. You know, like sometimes if you go on TikTok and you see, you know, become rich, you know, side hustles or whatever they're called, you know, 10K a month. And I'm like, please teach me your secret. I mean, how does it work?
Yeah, because it's not that straightforward in real life, is it?
It's not, you know. So, but again, you see, it's very lighthearted, and even the most introvert of people will open up to that. Obviously, you know, don't make it weird, you know. There has to be the professional decorum. You know, when you interview at sea level, you're not going to banter there left, right, and center. So
exactly.
You always need to adapt and assess the decorum and the suitability of the situation. But the point I'm trying to get across is get to know the person sitting in front of you by opening the conversation towards open-ended questions.
Yeah, we don't want yes and no answers because they don't really tell you anything.
They don't. Or, you know, when you ask what is your strength, instead of asking that, you know, say, what is, you know, the biggest contribution you had in your role last year? Something that you're really proud of. And listen to their story. You know, it's going to teach you so much more.
Yeah, I think that's usually the goal. You want to get a conversation, you want to get to know the person.
Yeah.
Because I think from knowing the person, it's easier to understand if they fit in the company and not just tick the boxes.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, things like, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Ask them, look, what interests you? What do you want to achieve in your professional career? Because when someone used to ask me that, when I used to interview, do you see yourself in 5 years? I'd be like, well, hopefully not dead. And what would you want me to say?
Yeah, and sometimes that's tricky because if, what level of ambition do you want to show? Do you want to be like, I want to be the CEO of the company? Is that too far? Is that not too far?
Look, that's not bad as long as it's honest. You know, some companies that will work, for others it won't. But it's also important to understand the level of value that would go into progression as well. I sometimes come across situations like this example you gave, you know, and it's actually a very common answer to this question. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? And the cockiest of us would say, you know, oh, I'll be sitting in your seat, you know. And in sales, most people would love that because it shows ambition. But does the person in front of you understand what the value that they need to bring to the role? And does the company understand the support they would need to give to the person in return to reach that level? Because if it's all at a theoretical level, I mean, we're splitting hairs here. I want to be a physicist. I would never be because I can't understand physics. I love it. I think it's magic, but, you know, that doesn't make me.
There's a gap between the knowledge and obviously the role. But also, I guess it's when people are hiring, sometimes there might be roles where you don't want persons to have ambition. So would you even place a question like that in that case?
And then in that case, it depends on the structure of the company. So if you need someone, you know, to be very consistent in the role and there is no form of, let's say, traditional progression, be honest about that. So, for example, I work with a lot of boutique clients. And the progression in those boutique clients is very different to what it would be in a large firm. So there won't be like senior manager and associate director and director and so on and so forth. But then I ask them, I say, okay, so where does this person progress? Some of them tell me, friend, there is no room to progress. This is a role for someone for 2-3 years. And we're honest about that with people. And for some people, it does work because this is exactly what they want.
Exactly. So if you're in a micro business, there isn't really too much room unless the boss is going to retire. You're
exactly.
Just stuck in that role.
Exactly.
I mean, yes, maybe the role will evolve. But there's a limit of what
you can do. And everyone is very obsessed with progression and growth. And, you know, to some extent, it is very good because that shows the capacity to think ahead. But then progression it actually does not come from titles and very rarely comes from increase of responsibilities. What it comes from is from increase of skills, and skills are multifaceted. We have soft skills, we have interpersonal skills, we have technical skills, and so on. So again, taking the example of an accountant, the most logical career progression of an accountant would be, if they work, you know, in a large firm, would be junior one, junior two, associate, and so on and so forth, all the way up to partner level. And usually that is done through technical progression, i.e. exposure to tasks and progression of their ACCA and everything. But how often is that progression complemented by training in soft skills areas? So like communication, diplomacy, how to deal with certain stuff. And
if you move up, you obviously have to deal with clients.
Yes, yes, so absolutely.
And when you start, the junior role is do this.
Exactly.
And once you become client-facing, doing this no longer cuts
yes,
it.
Yes, 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 exactly. So it's important, that's why I said in the interview process, to assess these personalities. Obviously, this has to be adjusted to the level of the role. You're not going to go, you know, thinking 10 years ahead for, you know, a junior level, for example, you know. It just has to, it has to be a balance, but it's important to go in it with the mindset of fact-finding and with the mindset of understanding the person in front of you, and in return, you know, giving them a very clear picture of what the role is and what the role is not as well.
I think that clarity is important for everyone, really, because maybe also part of the interview process, if you're hiring someone, you obviously need to fit, or depending on the size of the company, have to fit in an existing group. So When you're helping a company to recruit, do you also look into what their current team is and what those gaps are and how that person would fit in? Because obviously, I think while you like to always place someone, you don't want to place them and they leave shortly after because they don't fit.
Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely. The short answer is yes. I always try to understand the markup of the team. Now, however, as an external recruiter, there are certain limitations to that because obviously you're not there on a day-to-day basis. So you can only go by what the clients or the team members are telling you and a reasonable amount of market research. So there are certain limits to that, to some extent. But at the same time, again, going to what you said, neurodiversity, I really like this term, is also important to understand when you look at that markup, and if you see you've got five people that are exactly the same, and you need to hire external, that's your first question mark. Out of those five people, none of them can progress.
Okay.
None of them can fill the gap.
So that
now, sometimes it can be a question of growth. You have too much work and you need that additional person. But how often is that the case, really?
But even if that was the case, if I need someone else, does it mean I need to hire at a higher level or move someone? And so obviously that's, if I had people that are working with me for, say, 2-3 years and I need to hire a senior, and I hire a senior rather than
Someone from the team internally.
Then I think that has obviously changed in dynamics in the company. So if I was a company, I'm looking at, okay, I need to hire a person because I have too much work. But at what level do I hire? Do I move someone up? Do I bring someone in?
Exactly.
How would a company start thinking of going about that? Because obviously there are team dynamics, and you don't want to bring someone and have to go.
Yes.
Because that obviously sets you back.
Exactly, exactly. And it's a fine line, and sometimes it will work out, other times will not. There is always the element of error, because when we deal with people, there will always be the element of unknown, you know.
Always.
But there are a lot of things that one can do to minimize that risk of unknown on both sides as well. It's also important for companies to understand the competition level in the market. You know, what they are competing against, what other firms at a very basic level are paying, for example, you know, because if you are severely under the market rate or very much, you know, on the average lines, it can become quite difficult, because essentially what you're trying to do is to get someone to do exactly the same job for the same money, but to take them from a known equation into an unknown equation.
So obviously they want a raise to take cover of that risk.
To some extent, yes, but also it can be a change in culture, it can be a change in, you know, different elements. So, but those are very limiting factors, I would say. And So let's take the current situation in Malta at the moment. We're more or less at full employment rate.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a very low unemployment rate.
Incredible. And the unemployment rate is not incredible. It's not amongst qualified people, I presume. So
Yes, exactly. So let's say, again, using the example of the accountant, you're looking for an accountant on this amount of money, which is bang on the average market rate. So realistically, the only way you're going to get someone if someone else is incredibly unhappy where they are with their boss or with their working hours and stuff like that. So it's important for you, if you do find yourself in a situation where you're on the average side of the market rate, is to identify your unique selling points as a business. Because obviously remuneration is not one of them. And that's fine, because you know, realistically, when people move jobs, salaries is one of the 3-4 elements that it's important to them. But there are other elements that play a very big part in the decision-making process. So if you're on an average budget, I mean, it's fine. It's not the end of the world. You know, we're not all Amazon.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't even know if Amazon pays above market rate.
It depends. It depends what role you're looking for, I believe.
Probably. But you get my point. So then, what are your unique points as a business? So, for example, sometimes when I spoke with boutique businesses, I had a particular client say, but Fran, why would someone come and work here? We're only a team of 3 people. You know, and I said, look, okay, how do you work? You know, I say, okay, I call in sick. I can't come to work today. What do you do? I'll ask you what needs to be covered so I can try and do some of the work. So when you come back, it's not that much. I said, that's an amazing selling point. Do you have any idea how many people call in sick and then they come back and it's end of the world?
They have to basically recover all the work they missed and more.
Exactly, and more, you know. And I said, that is your unique selling point. It was like, oh.
And sometimes we don't think of details, you know, like that.
Exactly. Or, you know, let's say you have a flexible working policy. So, for example, I'm a working mother. And for me, if I was to look for a job, it would be very important to have the flexibility. You know, not only for mothers, as a parent, or maybe even as you know, non-parent, you may have other interests that take up your time. So, for example, I had situations with candidates that had outside interests that required them to leave the office at 4 o'clock, for example.
Yes, and I believe we have people in the office that have problems sleeping and wouldn't turn up before 10 or 11.
That would be me.
So it obviously makes a big difference.
It makes a big difference. Or for others, it would be the simple fact, and this is something that is very often ignored, is that when you work in a very small business, you have significantly greater visibility.
And also greater impact, I believe.
And greater impact, exactly. So it's important for companies to define their unique selling points. Now, if you're a very large company and you may lose some of these elements, which is only natural, you can't run a very large business being, you know, incredibly personable and having one-to-ones with everyone. I mean, it's just not logistically possible to do that. But what you can have as a very large company is resources, right? So resources in terms of training, resources, especially if it's an international company, to offer opportunities for secondments abroad, for example. So it's really important for a business, no matter the size, to think of their unique selling points and address those in the interviews, because those are actually what define your culture more or less as well. So it will help people understand, you know, what would be the benefits of working for you and whether those benefits are of value to them. Some of them maybe not, and that's really fine. You don't need to be everything everyone.
You just need to have the right mix for the right person.
Correct.
Yeah, I think sometimes we undervalue, because in a lot of companies, maybe not everyone can pay higher than average rates, as you said. And
absolutely,
we're like, yeah, we can't be competitive, so we have to just, you know, get very junior people out of university or find someone out of school.
Yeah.
And we don't think that, you know, maybe yes, we offer, so here at Buddy we have the option for people to work remotely. So we do 3 and 2 at the moment. We've had people that have gone and worked for a week abroad on a holiday. And those are benefits that maybe are not too difficult to implement for the right company, of course.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, everyone has at least one thing that they do very, very, very well that is unique to them. So, you know, really take that to market when you're looking for people. Really talk about it, because like that you will attract people that value that thing in the same way that you do as well.
I think that's probably one of the, I'd say, the highlights of the session, because most people probably don't think of that at all. So if I was looking to hire, that's probably need to be some of the hard thinking a company needs to do. Okay, how do I stand out from the other company around the corner that does pretty much the same thing? A lot of companies, luckily or not, do very similar things, maybe to different people, to different audiences. So identifying those little bits that make a difference could obviously make a big difference.
Make a very, very big impact, yeah.
Then if I was obviously trying to get this message across to potential candidates who haven't even applied, because I think that's where it all starts. How do I attract someone's interest?
Is it
the job title? Will the job title be enough for someone to read and find these tiny details?
Exactly.
Because at the end of the day, some of these details will not go in a job title.
Yes, absolutely. So the first thing is, if you have at least 2-3 employees in the business, because if you're a sole proprietor, you know, you can't really, you don't have anyone to rely on, you're starting from zero. But if you have some people in the business, the best thing to start with is to speak with your current employees about the need and involve them in the process as well and see whether they have any recommendations. And this is something I always advise my clients, and most of them are shocked, but Fran, you're supposed to be taking my money. You know, I will sooner or later, but you know, for you know, professional integrity, it's good to look at that, because people know people, they speak to people, and some of them will be able to make recommendations for you that you can have a look at, you know, but those recommendations are not going to materialize if the process is wrong, what we spoke in the first part. So it's important to get that right first. Number two, you know, when you're looking to go out to the market, and if you go onto any job site in Malta and even abroad, type in any job title you want, the advertisements are a long list of responsibilities, right? You must, okay? A, B, C, D, so and so forth. You need to have ding, 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 ding. And look, realistically, people that will apply to that job would be the ones that need a job at that point in time, okay, or they're testing the market. But for example, taking the case of Malta, where we're almost full employment, you know, most candidates are not actively looking, okay? So they're not going to apply for something that sounds exactly like their job, because realistically, an accountant knows what he needs to do. You don't need to tell him he needs to do VAT returns and then prepare the accounts to trial balance, you know, and then, you know, do the tax amortization and things like that. An accountant knows what an accountant does, right? And hopefully.
Unless you want a very specific type of accountant.
Unless you want a very specific. So a job advertisement is designed to attract interest, okay? So I always recommend to clients, I mean, when they work with me, I do the advertisements, and I do them quite in a different way. Or if they want to do it themselves, is to engage a copywriter, okay? Because it's important that you attract interest, you know. You can insert stuff that is relevant, you know, of course. You're recruiting for a CEO, you know, you need to make certain elements clear, but you don't need to ram it down people's throats and say, you must, because they know what they need to do at the end of the day. So it starts by grabbing the attention of the reader. So, for example, most will say, we're looking for someone passionate. We are a fun company. We are like a family, which, by the way, saying that you're like a family is huge red flags, right? Especially for people who come from dysfunctional families.
You have to think of that.
You have to think of that. Or, you know, or other adjectives that, I mean, I saw some ridiculous adjectives at one point. I think at one point I saw vibrant or something like that. I was like, what does that even mean? You know, and, you know, these adjectives that have no meaning or very little meaning. So instead of saying, you know, we are, you know, a fun-loving company, if fun is your unique selling point as a business, give an example. You know, we sailed to Camino last week with all the team on a boat. Jane fell in the water, she got rescued, and then we had beers in the office. Want to join us?
Yeah, I mean, it will attract certain types of people.
For someone whose fun is a value, they're going to instantly click to that. Or let's say your unique selling point is what I said earlier, the example of that client, you know, Like if you're sick, you know, we're going to look after you, you know. Say, look, Jane was off the office during VAT returns. We had it done so she can rest.
Yeah.
Do you understand the same level?
That's how we define our team exactly. culture.
And that says a lot more than, you know, we are fun-loving or we are supportive. Give one example. Obviously, again, it has to fit the decorum of the role and the level of seniority, you know. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't express it in the same way at senior level, for example.
No, you're not going to say, you know, the last CEO had a tie on his hat and jumped off the sailing boat.
Exactly.
And we expect the same of you, because obviously that's going to throw
Exactly.
Off.
You know, but for example, you know, at a CEO level, if you're looking for someone to really come and reshape the organization, you can say, you know, do you like people not interfering in your day-to-day work? Are you comfortable carrying out the decisions and explaining them to the board? Now, for someone who is, you know, a hardcore CEO, this will be something of value. So again, talk to people like you would talk to them in a normal situation. Again, you wouldn't go to a bar and strike a conversation with someone and say, "I am passionate."
Yeah, be like, there are things that probably you can get from your own team as well. I mean, I recall conversations with my team, like maybe 2-3 months after someone starts, like, "How do you find it here?" They'd be like, "Yes, this used to happen in my last job. Yeah. This happens here instead. And this is what makes me want to stay here."
Yes, those are,
I think, things that are much easier to use as mini case studies, let's say.
Exactly, to convey to the audience as to why they should have some level of interest. So, for example, for me, when I do the advertising and stuff, I get, you know, a lot of people calling me. They don't apply to it, but they call me and say, "Fran, I saw your ad. Can we talk a bit more about it before I apply?"
And I think at that level, it's probably easier for them because you're a third party. You're not in the company.
Yes. But even for companies, this would work. You know, some of them would be like, "Look, I like to know more. It sounds interesting." I have had a lot of situations again where people, you know, came to me and said, "Look, I wasn't looking, but the way that you expressed, you know, the role, that sounds really cool. I'd like to know more." You know, it does work. It does work. And it's important to step outside of that. And again, use your employees. You know, you can have videos of the employees if they're comfortable, or testimonials or stuff like that, that you can use to assist you with the recruitment as well. But a lot of the things can really be done internally. You know, usually when companies get to me, is when the internal options have been exhausted. And this is one of the first things I ask them and guide them on. Have you exhausted all internal options? You know, have you tried this? Have you tried that?
I think that's also a very important part, because we tend to go like always look outside.
And
looking inside is a key part of that process.
Yes.
And formulating the right, because I think when you're talking to your team, they will help you formulate the right person fit.
Yes.
And it's not just about what I think I need, it's what the company needs. And the company is made up of people.
Yes, exactly.
It's a consultative process to an extent.
It's very much, very much consultative. And it's important to understand, you know, what makes these people tick. Because at the end of the day, recruitment is a buying and selling process, no matter how you look at it. And because, you know, you are, you know, selling the job to someone, and that someone is to buy into your job.
Yeah.
Okay. So at the very basic element of buying and selling, it's what's in it for me.
Always. Always. I mean, at the end of the day, a job is not some transaction that happens over 5 minutes.
No, exactly. And at the end of the day, a job is an exchange of value. A company pays you for the value that you bring, and you charge the company for the value that you provide.
No, exactly. I think that's something we tend to forget sometimes, that it's a value exchange. But in addition to the value exchange, it's something that needs to make the candidate happy in the role.
Yes, and the company also happy with the value that they're getting from. So to give you an example, sometimes I have situations, again, I understand that, you know, when one wants to progress and move jobs, they also want to increase, you know, their salary, which makes a lot of sense. But I always ask them, so for example, let's say someone is on 20K and they want to increase to 25K. Assuming that at the moment where they are, that 20K is relevant to their skill set that they currently have with the market average, but they want to have this increase. So I'd ask them, okay, so where would be your value add between these two numbers? And a lot of them know, what do you mean?
People pay it. I think that's what they say. My friend has 25. My friend has 30.
Yes.
And I, funnily enough, I was having a similar conversation a couple of days ago. Someone was talking, it's like, yes, my friend had offers of this much after 1 year experience. I'm like, but yeah, you have to look at the industry, what he's giving.
There's a lot of changes, but it's also important, and this comes very handy also in salary negotiations, that you think from a value perspective. So even when you go to ask for an increase, whether you're going to ask for an increase at an interview or during your annual appraisal or what have you, that has to be backed by value. And it's important, you know, on the other side of the fence, for people to identify the value that they bring to the table, because like that, it will make a lot more sense.
No, exactly. Exactly. Fran, I think it's definitely been a pleasure to talk. What I'd like to probably ask you is, if someone has been listening to this podcast and maybe is implementing some of your advice and looking to hire internally, and probably they're exhausting that effort, then how is it best that they maybe reach out to you or learn more about what you do?
Mm-hmm. So if one exhausts all of the internal option and they have the need to partner externally, it's important to identify, you know, an external partner like a recruitment agency or what have you, that is right for the type of role and the type of business that you operate in. So, for example, sometimes I get a lot of requests in areas that are outside my expertise, and I'm very honest. I say, look, I don't know anything about it. I will be less than useless with this. They go like, what?
Because I guess they might be used to working with you on something else, or they've seen you around.
You know, I mean, like, you know, if you ask me for, I don't know, let's say a gaming company asks me for an affiliate manager, I wouldn't even know where to start, you know. So it's important to identify the external partner that understands the sector that you are recruiting in. Now, this is a very important part, because when most people say, you know, we understand the sector we're recruiting in, it doesn't mean that we know how to do, like in my case, accounting, or I'm not a lawyer or a compliance specialist, and by no stretch of the imagination, I'm a C-level expert on a day-to-day basis. But what I do know through my work by specializing in these sectors is I know where to find these people, I know what makes them tick, and then I know how to speak with them to attract them. You would have a very different conversation with a lawyer and a very different conversation with an accountant.
Yeah, they're obviously looking for different things, and they're made up in a different way to an extent.
Exactly. So it's important you understand the expertise level. Then it's important to understand how they go to the market and how they represent you as well. It's important to look at the style of communication that they have to make sure it fits with yours as well. And it's important to also assess their methodology, because a lot of the times what happens with companies, and sometimes I get requests like this, so I get an email from, you know, a business friend, this is what we're looking for, job description, like, send me what we're looking, send me if you've got any good people. And I say, okay, we'll need to have a conversation, I need to understand more. Some of them, but well, just send me the people you've got. I'm like, look, I'm not the right recruiter for you, I don't work like that.
Yeah, it's not about sending people, it's making sure they're the right fit.
It's not only that, but you also need to understand the business and how it works to see if you can help them, because in a lot of instances, I can't.
Yes.
It's as simple as.
It's not just about what I want, it's the type of business and the type of people.
And there is this misconception that the more recruiters you work with, the better results you will get, which is actually very, very wrong, very wrong.
No, yeah, not necessarily, not unless you're hiring tens of thousands of people and you need But
if it's like that, then what you need to do is to build your internal capabilities and partner, you know, and outsource or insource in that, you know. So there's always a lot of methodology that goes into it. Because if you have, for example, 5 recruiters looking for one person in a limited pool of talent, one of them calls it something, the other one calls it in a different way, and they alienate people and stuff like that.
They might have the same people in their pools at the end of the day.
It's not only that, but you have to realize that as external partners, and this is something that I am very honest about, you know, when I go out to the market, I put in my resources, my time, my knowledge, and my expertise. Now, I'm not going to apply that to the fullest extent if my chances of success are 1 in 5 or 1 in 10. I mean, it makes no sense. And then, you know, you end up as a business asking yourself, but why X has only sent me 1 CV? Because realistically, you know, no business is going to spend their time putting all of their resources, you know.
In a low probability.
So, for example, you know, if you were an auditor and I come to you and I tell you, no, You do payroll, right?
Yeah.
And I tell you, Jonathan, I've got 10 employees. You do the payroll for this 10, but I'm working with another payroll company as well. And at the end, I'll see which one I choose. Tell me now what you're going to tell me.
Yeah, it's obviously a tricky conversation. Like, you're trying both people. I mean, in our scenario, it's probably a bit different because we're a software. So we go like, yeah, go ahead, try us out. But I obviously will not go in and say, yeah, this is how you should set up your 10 people. I'm just going to tell you, yeah, look, this is it. This is the access.
And that's what happened when you engage, you know, multiple agencies. Look, these are the people we have on the database. If they fit, let us know. And that's fine. If that's the type of level of service you want, it's great. But when it becomes specialist, that level of service doesn't work out.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, if you want the attention, you need someone kind of dedicated. Like,
you have to, the level of attention you get is proportional to the level of attention that you give in return, you know. And there are other areas. So, for example, in my business, apart from the headhunting side, I offer talent advisory services, which means that I sit with a company for a period of 2-3 days, I don't know, depending on the size, to help them increase their internal capabilities, because lots of the times they don't need a headhunter. You know, and I tell people this, look, you don't need to pay me, you know, X amount that I charge, because you can actually do this yourself. You have a good brand, you know, the level of role that you're looking for has a good market that you can attract directly, and this is how you do it. And that's more cost effective for them.
Yeah. And it's works. A win-win scenario, because at the end of the day, if they grow or if they come and maybe are beyond that step, then you're there for them again. So yeah, they're probably interested in what you do. How would they best contact you, or what industries can you help people in?
You can find me on LinkedIn, just type in Fran Moisa, or on the website fmsearch.eu. You know, contact me there, drop me an email, or, you know, something like that. So it's absolutely fine. We'll have a call, we'll talk, and see what's the best way forward.
So Fran, thank you a lot for your time today. I think it was a really interesting conversation. So hopefully our guests who were tuning in and learning more about recruitment and how to go about it have learned a lot from this. And we'll see our guests next time with next podcast. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone. Bye.
I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. If you're looking to put your people first through HR and payroll software, visit www.buddy.hr to learn more.